This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
What's happening? Tink and Tierney ready to go on this Tuesday. Lots to hit. CBS Sports Radio coming to you from the Rocket Mortgage Studio. And when you need certainty in the home buying process with a loan that fits your life, Rocket can. What's good? Hope everybody's having a great Tuesday here. CBS Sports Radio, CBS Sports Network, Tiki and Tierney Show. Twitter at Tiki and Tierney. Instagram, same deal. YouTube.com/Tiki and Tierney. So I just need clarification on something, Tiki, before we get to Steph Curry, who is absolutely out of his mind bonkers.
Unreal.
Wow. The slack chain, the urgency, right?
Yes.
I would actually put it out there on social media, but there might be a few, you know, curses. We have our inside jokes. I can't really do that, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So our slack chain yesterday was met with the highest degree of urgency. Actually, going back from the previous day, mm-hmm. when Teak sent us a story about the Super League and soccer and this massive transformation that's going to rock the sport, break it away, the 12 mega powers to form their own league. And, you know, we carve out, you know, 35, 40 minutes of meaningful talk of soccer on our show, which we very rarely do, even though my partner likes the game and knows it. You know, we've got to pick our spots. And the very next day, it basically goes up in flames. What happened?
Yeah, man. It's a house of cards, bro.
What in the world happened? So, thumbnail sketch.
So basically, it was hard to find anyone who liked this idea other than the 12 owners. And ultimately, owners know that when fans start protesting in the streets, literally protesting in the streets over the Super League like they did in Chelsea, you ultimately change your mind, so to speak. So Chelsea was the football club, was the first of the English Premier League teams to withdraw or plan to withdraw from the European Super League. Manchester City followed suit. Then it's Barcelona and Atletico Madrid from La Liga. They're also going to pull out of this. And so after having all of this fanfare and the announcement of this 12 to 15 permanent member Super League, yeah, with five extras that would come in on an earned basis, it feels like it is falling down. It's not fully done yet, but it feels like it's falling down before our faces right now.
BT. All right. So that's the latest update. Wanted to pick up on that. Obviously, we did a lot of that on the show yesterday. Steph Curry. I mean, right now, what Steph Curry is doing is, you know, Acuna was in the middle of this for a while. He actually got a little bit hurt, so hopefully he's okay. The Braves young superstar. But imagine, and we've seen Trout, we've seen the great ones do this. Imagine like a 3-week baseball binge where a guy hits, you know, I'm talking about 3 weeks, so a little less than a month, 10 home runs, 19, 20 ribbies, bats 530, has an OPS of 1,500. Or a golfer who, you know, just obliterates a course and throws up, you know, I don't even know if this is an equivalent. I was going to say like 3 or 4 rounds in a row in the low 60s. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know quite what the equivalent is, but I do know when Steph Curry's playing, what he's doing right now is not human. And he's just performing at a level that is insane. The degree of difficulty of shots that he hits every time out, it's preposterous. It defies, you know, human convention. Steph Curry has now, as crazy as this sounds, the middling Warriors, who are a 500 team and are the ninth seed in the Western Conference and will be in the play-in, unless, of course, they were to fall below the 10th threshold, mm-hmm. which with Steph Curry playing this way, I don't think that they will. We now need to have a conversation. Is Steph Curry Getting ready to swipe away the MVP?
I don't think that that's going to happen.
As crazy as that sounds.
As you know, BT, I like to pull out this trusty base basketball reference MVP tracker.
Yes.
And right now, the MVP tracker has basically everybody fallen by the wayside. James Harden's down to 13%. Giannis is only 7%. LeBron James, I mean, he's even on the list anymore. Yeah, LeBron James is here at 2.1%.
Doncic, what's Doncic?
Doncic is way down at 1.7%.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, no, he fell way off.
Below LeBron, who's missed all this time?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah, it is interesting. And I don't think this is updates as frequently as it should. It's not like day-to-day because Embiid's not back on the list yet after missing, what did he miss, like 10 games or so?
Well, he's been back a week, so this is a pretty faulty database that you reference here, Barber.
I think it's off by like a week. I mean, I think it's literally off by a week.
So, is this basketball reference? How
yes
are they off by a week?
I have no idea, BT.
Oh, my God. But the anymore.
The runaway favorite is Nikola Jokic.
The Joker.
Who is 62.5%. Steph Curry hasn't quite made the list yet, but I think it won't be long because this, look, what he's doing right now, hold on, we'll get to the MVP conversation in a second. But when you watch Steph Curry play, you are highly entertained, right?
Yes.
It's what basketball feels like it should be, right? It's these elite athletes doing ridiculous things with the ball. You know, back in the day, it was Jordan dunking and, you know, these reverse layups. He'd go up on one side and he'd sit there and just hang. He's like, all right, you guys can pass me by. All right, I'm going to come up on the other side, right? Those were the things we used to get marveled by, posters that we would look for.
Yeah.
Now it's Steph Curry, I don't know, yo-yoing the hell out of people and getting them to, you know, run back 5 feet. And he just stops and shoots a three-pointer in your mug. So it's what more than anything, he is making basketball entertaining to watch on a nightly basis, because if you just mess around and catch him, you can't, even if you don't like the Warriors, you're going to be entertained.
Well, you just said that this is the way basketball is supposed to look. And I've got to really disagree, because nothing should look this artistic. It's bordering on the impossible.
But you don't think so?
That's a compliment for Steph.
No, but hold on. Think about like Dr. J when he would come down. You know, he'd do the swing.
I got you.
Like the guys would go under him and he'd dunk or. Yep. Or who's the finger roll guy? George Gervin,
the Iceman.
Yep, he's
Dominique
he's
Wilkins.
Just gliding.
I get it.
You know, that was artistic.
No, but very
right?
artistic, but here's the difference. And you first referenced Jordan. And if you think of Jordan, you know, the just array of images, whether it's the Lakers when he didn't really need, but he went up with that, and then he kind of went back to, in the finals, went back to the left hand, that sick finals move.
Yeah.
Or as he navigated the baseline, I remember one time against the Knicks, he started going back out away from the rim with his back turned.
Yes.
And then he quickly turned and
flipped,
he walked
yep.
the tightrope and he dunked it on Ewing,
yeah,
went by Oakley. You know all the snapshots, right? That's artistry, no doubt. But that's all around the rim.
Hmm.
What makes this almost not believable, like really, if you told me, you know, we'll just go with Jordan.
Well, use a different analogy. Not believable. It's like masterpiece level.
Yeah. No, it really is.
Because not replicable, some of the stuff he's doing.
Yeah, that's true. It's not to minimize anything Dr. J did, mm-hmm. or, you know, even go back to the 1976 ABA dunk contest when he took in front, you know, a little bit inside the foul line, but we don't want to be sticklers for the, we want to be tough judges. We'll flash the 10, but he was the first guy to even attempt to take off of the free throw line. That was in the ABA and all the other dunks that were created. And then the in-game stuff that started to really permeate the game, all high level, intoxicating, crazy stuff, no doubt. But if you told me, and, you know, I mean, you know a lot of people. I don't know if you know a lot more bigger basketball fans than me. I mean,
nope.
I love the game, and I watched it my whole life as a kid. I mean, every poster, every jersey, every move, know it all, loved it, right? If you told me that, you know, little 12-year-old or 9-year-old BT sitting on his couch in his basement with his pops watching the game in Brooklyn, that when you're in your 40s and your son is starting to watch the game, your children
mm-hmm.
are starting to watch the game now, instead of the things around the rim that you're watching, you will now see this from 35 feet away. It really would not have seen. It would not have seemed remotely plausible.
Yeah.
So you've got your database, the basketball reference database, right?
Yep.
Sharp Tierney's got his own. You go to the percentage, I go to the odds. And let me hit you with this, because I've very rarely seen this. During the game, all right, he started, back to the MVP discussion, which is becoming more and more realistic, and I'll spell it out for you. I don't think he's going to necessarily win, but I think it's wrong to say that he cannot win. Here's why. First of all, during the game, the odds shifted. Now, these people in Vegas, they know what they're doing. There's a reason why high-rises are built, and they could charge $400 per round of golf, and they could send a limo to get you. Like, they know what they're doing. The odds went from 50 to 1 during the game for Steph to win the MVP to 20 to 1, which is amazing. I mean, you want to talk about just a monstrous leap forward. Then there were as long as 10,000, all right, plus 10,000. Now they're as short as plus 1,800. You say, well, what is all this? Stop hitting me with this betting jar. What does this mean, Tierney? What does it mean? I'll tell you what it means. Right now, the Joker is minus 350. Embiid is plus 350. Giannis is plus 1,600. Steph is fourth, right behind those guys.
Yeah.
Giannis is not winning it back-to-back-to-back. Voter fatigue, not winning it.
Yep.
If Embiid, and I certainly hope that this doesn't happen, but if he misses a few more games, he's not going to win the award.
Yeah.
He missed some time, all right? His only competition at this point, unless Embiid stays healthy, is the Joker. Now, they've got three more ESPN games. All right, and this is where it gets really important, that the mainstream high-profile games, it's where you make your mark and where you sway public sentiment for this stuff, right? Friday night, they're playing Denver.
Mm-hmm.
They've got a TNT game against Dallas. Doncic, all eyes going to be on that. So you have three more games on ESPN, one of which is the Joker, who's the favorite by far right now.
Yep.
The game with Doncic, all right. Then you've got a couple of NBA TV games. I'm not saying that he's going to win, but I'm saying when you drop 49 against the best team in the East, all right, when you average 41 points per game in April, when you hang four 40-plus point games on opponents in April, not to mention a 53-point game, you're one of only, you know, a handful of 32-year-olds to have multiple 50-point games in a season, and almost everybody likes you, you've got a chance.
Yeah, no, you do. You do. And here's why I said what I said, BT. What's been my gripe with you for regular season basketball, really, since we started doing this show?
It's relatively meaningless. It's That's predictable. Right. And it doesn't really bear much on the outcome of the season.
And so many players play that way. Right, they play like.
Yeah. I want names. Wait, I want names. If you're gonna say that, I want you to identify.
Well,
what
James Harden is one.
Play
when
that way.
James Harden was one when he was with Houston. He wouldn't get into. He's not that way in Brooklyn, obviously, because I think his role is more defined. In Houston, I remember watching James Harden. He just goes through the motions for two quarters. In the third quarter, he starts to pick it up, and then in the fourth quarter, he's like, "All right, I'm ready to go."
I don't know, okay? Man. See, so, I think that's unfair to James. And I'm not even a Harden fan. During the playoffs, James Harden regular season has been historically great.
Yeah, but it's
he's
not,
one of the few guys. But he does, play every night.
But he doesn't
does
play.
Perform.
But it's a different urgency.
Okay,
you gotta understand what I'm saying.
Go ahead.
I'm not saying these guys aren't great because they're great.
No, I got
like
you.
Like Kevin Durant can just stand around and get to a spot and just, all right, I'm gonna go shoot.
So you're saying some guys mailing it in a little bit? Is
no,
what you're
it's not mailing it in. It's just there's no majesty to it. Like they're not trying to be special. They're just trying to be just do what they do.
Okay.
Whereas Steph Curry, it feels like every single time he has the ball, like he's thinking of doing something magical, right? It's like, how can I max out this particular possession's opportunity for the team, for myself? And when he does these things, it's almost like, and they seem improbable, like the shot he made.
The left-handed
three-pointer. Well, maybe it wasn't a three-pointer. Doesn't matter.
It was a long two.
He was out by the perimeter, and he just basically threw it up. He was looking into the stands, BT.
Yeah, it's crazy.
And he threw it up.
Yeah.
But it was almost intentional. Like, he's practiced that at some point in his career.
He's messed around
and
with
so
that.
And so my point is, he looks for opportunities to do things that he's prepared to do. Whereas I don't know if every player plays that way. And so when I say it's this is how it's supposed to be, this is what I want to watch, right? I want to watch basketball that excites me. I don't want to watch guys coming down the court. All right, you're about 3 feet away. All right, I'm just going to shoot this thing. Right, clank, right? It's just boring basketball. Steph makes it unboring, and that's how basketball should be, and it's not enough.
Here's the difference, and I now understand what you're saying. I don't fully buy it, but I understand. I respect what you're saying. That's your point of view. I get it. The only thing that I would say is I think he kind of has to do that out of necessity. Now, if you look at the ultimate superstars in the game, right?
Yeah.
He's obviously on the short list. LeBron's 6'8", and he's a rock. He's a piece of granite. Kevin Durant's basically 7 feet, shoot right over you. Embiid's 7'2", 260, nimble, could shoot right over you and go right through you. Joker's 7'1". Giannis is 6'10", and one of the most explosive athletes in the world. The thing about Steph Curry, I don't think that he does this stuff. I don't think he's predisposed to either put on a show or try to do something special. I think that that is a byproduct of him trying to free himself up out of necessity.
Yeah,
because he's only 6'3", and he's not jumping over you.
But who else can do that?
Damian Lillard a little bit.
Yeah.
Doncic. But Doncic is big.
Yeah. I mean.
Doncic is 6'8".
I just don't know. I just don't know if anyone can do it like that and be that efficient.
Maybe nobody can. I agree. Nobody can. I guess the only thing we disagree on is he does that out of necessity. Like, Steph can't just get, unless you just, you know, like CYO,
yeah,
like I would do, wave your hand and hopefully somebody passes and shoot. That's not flying in the NBA. So when you have these, you know, these closeout, you know, and these, you have superstar, you have NBA players, obviously.
Yeah. Long NBA players,
yep,
too.
Yep, 3-and-D guys on the perimeter, guys switching, no doubt. If he didn't do this, Steph Curry might be a 17, 18, 19-point-per-game guy.
Maybe.
He's got to do this wacky stuff.
Maybe, but my point is that he does this wacky stuff, and it works. Right?
No question.
Nobody else could do this. Like, maybe Trae Young is trying to do this, but
that's a pretty decent example.
He's not nearly as
efficient,
yeah, or accurate. I mean, Steph in this last, 11 games, he's shooting 53% from three-point range.
He really is nuts.
I mean, like, the makes every half of the shot, more than half of the shots he puts up are going in. It doesn't matter where he is on the court.
Yeah.
And that's, most people can't claim that. He's a unicorn in this sense for this type of play. And it's exciting. And I wish we saw more of it. The problem is, I don't know if we saw more of this, if we would see as good of basketball.
What's more exciting? Jordan doing that. I'm not saying who's better. We know the answer to that.
Yeah.
More exciting. Jordan doing his stuff around the rim. And he was a great mid-range shooter as well.
Yeah.
And a great free throw shooter, blah, blah, blah. But in terms of, you know, really you think Jordan, you think all the crazy artistry around the rim. And Dr. J and Dominique and some other guys that would do that. Many, many guys. Or what Steph's doing from 30 feet out to free himself up, wheeling and dealing, stopping on a dime, reversing, pump fakes, left hand, right hand. I mean, what's more exciting? It's probably Steph.
Probably Steph. The only thing that – because my appetite has changed. When I was younger, all I wanted to see was the dunk.
Oh, absolutely.
Right? I just wanted to see the physicality.
Sure.
Whether it was what was his name for the Seattle Seahawks? Why am I forgetting
Sean Kemp.
Name? Sean Kemp.
Yeah.
Coming down and just like blowing past somebody and doing like a reverse dunk and just I mean, it was just like sick. It was like, oh my God, look at that. Mm-hmm. But guys didn't shoot three-pointers that much back then, at least not like Steph does. Now it's recency bias because just watching Steph is, it's just entertaining. You can't take your eyes off of him because you know as soon as he gets the ball, something's happening. It's never going to be, okay, I'm going to, you know, get a pick and roll. I'm going to come off this screen and just shoot it. He's going to come off that screen. He's going to, you know, yo-yo you, and then he's going to go around you, and he's going to step back, and then maybe he's going to pump fake, and he's going to go in the lane again. He's going to come back the other side, and then he's going to shoot it, and it's going to go in, right? It's just like, it's so much
that
you're seeing when you see him play. And he has to do this, obviously, because they don't have any other scorers on the Golden State Warriors right now. Maybe Wiggins every now and then, Oubre, sometimes. But it's really just Steph. So he has to do this in order for them to be viable and win some games. And he's got them at 500, which is miraculous because we didn't think they were going to get close to this.
Well, we had them what? I had them the 8th seed. You had them 7 or 8. So they're in the vicinity that we thought. But I think the recent surge has not forced us to modify expectations because they're not going to win anything this year with that cast. But he has forced us to pay attention. We were at a point, we were just about ready to kind of push them aside. All right, Dubs, we'll see you next. All due respect, we'll see him when Clay's back. You do a little tinkering this offseason. Now we have to watch, and now we want to keep watching.
Yeah,
it's just a thing of beauty. He's incredible, man.
By the way, here's another breaking story based on this European Super League.
Yeah.
Manchester United. This is obviously one of the huge clubs over there. Their vice chairman, Ed Woodward, is going to step down because of this Super League fiasco.
Okay.
Man, this is getting crazy.
It's getting a little messy, so I figure we might have to circle back to this at some point today. I could tell you, is that your way of luring me back in a little bit here? That's your way, right?
It's just amazing. This was like the biggest thing. We're going to make billions of dollars, and all of a sudden everybody's like, we're good.
Hey, listen, we led the top of the 5 o'clock hour with this. We'll get back to it later today because things are changing. We'll put that back on we'll make an adjustment to the rundown for sure. All right, so Steph has, at least kind of forced the Warriors back onto the table, back into the discussion here. The Lakers, now, one of their stars is coming back, and soon. How much should they, push him when he comes back? We'll have that discussion. That's next. Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio. All right, Tiki and Tierney here, CBS Sports Radio, CBS Sports Network. Twitter, Tiki and Tierney. Tiki, before we get to the Lakers here, yeah, it's funny. A lot of people enjoy that Steph conversation. I was checking Twitter during the break, and, more than a few people brought up the notion that, unlike other players in the past, this is not to diminish at all, what Steph Curry does. But the absence of hand checking.
That's a great point.
And the freedom to get yourself loose.
Can't get bounced around. Can't get knocked off your spot. I mean, nothing. Otherwise, you're shooting free throws. And where he's always jacking them up from and making them to a large extent.
Yes.
You're getting three free throws. And he's a 95% free throw shooter. So
it's just about.
He's getting three no matter what happens.
Yep. By the way, next hour, Benjamin Watson, former NFL tight end. We'll get into the Sean Watson situation, which, again, we're gonna stay in our lane. I mean, we are not lawyers, although, we had a lawyer on, Amy Dash, who was great. Mm-hmm. And we've obviously tackled this where we can, certainly when it first started to break. And, it seems, while it seemed very ominous for a long time, as all these women came forward up to, I think, 22, the recent tea leaves kind of suggest maybe. Mm-hmm. Maybe something else, which we'll get to. Also, Mike Tomlin gets the extension. Where's the pressure for Tomlin? Should there be any in Pittsburgh? All things will hit. Let's hit the Lakers now, Teak. The return of Anthony Davis coming any day now. Mm-hmm. LeBron not far behind. So when you look at, we've said for a long time, listen, as long as the Lakers are whole by the playoffs, and it doesn't matter if they're an 8 seed or a 7 seed or a 6 seed, even if they're at any point below the four is the cut line to host the first round series, it's relatively immaterial because, number one, every arena is not full right now. Mm-hmm. And more importantly, if you have LeBron and AD, you would have great. And the way Schroeder's played, Kuzma, these guys have been emboldened by their absence, have been getting more shots and more looks, whatever. You would think that, that duo and Vogel, who's a good coach, can roll into any venue and pretty much handle business, especially without Murray now for the Nuggets. Things have changed a bit there. So I don't think at all the Lakers should rush their timeline or accelerate the timeline, maybe better stated, and force them back to try to avoid a play-in game or whatever. But there is a little urgency here only because of LeBron's age and because, time's ticking. As great as he is, you don't have a LeBron 5 or 6 more years. How should they play this?
I think they need to do like they did at the beginning of last season. As soon as both these guys are cleared and healthy and they say they can give it their all, that is 35-plus minutes, then they need to put their foot down. I don't think they should ease their way into this, BT. Mm. I feel like by easing their way, they do themselves a disservice of catching up to where they need to be. And I'm not talking about, like, chemistry. They have chemistry.
Yep.
I'm talking, like, conditioning and getting used to playing a full game and having an urgency in the, second quarter, then pushing that all the way through to the fourth quarter like they did last year, which set them up for the championship run that they went on. Mm-hmm. The problem, and I think the problem isn't LeBron, because I think LeBron's injury, the high ankle sprain, those suck. I mean, because it's really a ligament. It's not, it feels like we're talking bone and it's just like something, but it's a ligament and you don't really know how good it's going to feel until you actually go out and do something on it. But ultimately, you can push through it. It's kind of pain, right? Mm-hmm. With Anthony Davis, with and a potential Achilles tendinosis. They also say Achilles tendinosis, which is
the same thing about Kevin Durant, and then it's
exactly
snapped.
So.
No, I got you.
The challenge is not LeBron.
Yep.
Because LeBron, if he's on the court, he's playing 35 minutes. It just
Agreed.
Is what it is. The challenge is Anthony Davis, who has a long history of tough injuries that have knocked him out of important parts of season. Mostly these were the Pelicans, obviously. But still, I worry about him more than I worry about LeBron.
So do I.
But I think if LeBron is back,
yeah,
it still gives them a chance to push through to the second round, maybe even the third round. The question is, how do you manage AD? And that's an answer I don't have, because I don't know AD's mind. I don't know his mindset. You know, remember KD? KD had the same injury. You just mentioned it. As soon as KD was cleared to play, you knew he was going to come back and play, even if it ended up snapping it.
Yeah.
AD? I don't know. We haven't experienced that enough in his career.
I think the level of urgency, and again, I don't know what's in his heart right now, but the urgency for Davis should be, you know, somewhat diminished based on the fact that they already got the championship a year ago.
You're right.
I'm not saying you mail it in the rest of this year, and I'm not saying you necessarily punt for next year. I would play it differently with Davis, though, if I'm the Lakers, because, you know, you look at it through the prism of the remaining part of this season and the pursuit of defending the championship, which is obviously something very tangible. But I'm also looking at AD, much more than LeBron, as a bridge to my future.
Yes.
Because he's younger.
As an organization.
As organizationally. And again, if I didn't have the championship last year, all right, LeBron came first year, he got hurt his groin against the Warriors, missed 40 games, all right, didn't do anything. If they didn't win last year, year two, didn't win the championship. Here we go, LeBron, mid-30s, contract's up pretty soon. Not that he's going to necessarily leave, but, you know, the time's ticking, odometer's starting to attack on those miles. We got to win. Then it's like, to me, I would almost throw caution to the wind and organizationally do whatever it took. And I would live with that decision if I'm running the show. Like if one of the guys went down and if it was a serious injury, I could look myself in the mirror and say, you know what? We brought LeBron here to win a championship. We brought AD here to win a championship. Again, this is all under the auspice. If they didn't win it last year, hey, we're going for it. And if something goes awry, then we'll deal with it. And I've got to be big enough to take those bullets from the media, and I'll handle that. You know, if I'm Pelinka, Bus, whatever, however you want to frame it. I think that with the championship, that changes everything for me. Where, you know, I just kept seeing Kevin Durant, you know, icing and it was supposed to be the calf, and it was on the Achilles. So there was a little misleading information. If it's truly the calf, then maybe I'm a little less prudent. If I'm not fully sure, Teague, if I sit him out a little bit longer than he needs to and we lose a series earlier than we should, I can live with that because I know that he'll be okay next year.
Yeah, and you know what, BT? I don't know. They're not the story right now. You know, as crazy as that sounds, LeBron James and the Lakers and AD, they're not the story. It's not the one that I think we're excited about. Last year, we were excited about that Lakers squad and what they were going to do. I think the story has become the Nets, or really a team in the East, whether it's the Philadelphia 76ers, if they can get Tobias Harris playing consistently. Without him, they're just a different team. That's why Steph was able to beat them the other night. Was that last night?
Last night.
Yeah, it was last night's game. And so I think the story is more kind of this new super team in the East, the Brooklyn Nets, and whether or not they can win a championship. I think what you said is right on. Because they won a championship, forget, you know, internally, they're not content, but they're okay if AD misses this. Mm-hmm. I think just like nationally, perceptually, this Lakers team, we're not like clamoring to see them win a championship again because they already did it. I think the Nets are more of the story this year. If those three can get healthy and play together and ultimately do what everybody thinks they're going to do.
They're definitely more of the story now. And as much as I would take the prudent path, if I'm not sure with Davis, then I'm going overly conservative because of the championship. However, you know, from just an overall like viewing interest, there's nothing in the West that excites me right now.
No,
the Denver Nuggets without Jamal Murray, not that interesting. You know, Doncic is great; they're going nowhere. All right, the Clippers, you're going to take the baton? All right, we'll see.
They're still not playing together yet.
And they still don't excite me the way the Lakers. Right. Like the Lakers, if you get Lakers-Nets, or you get, which is what I think the NBA should certainly want, or even if you get Lakers-Philly, then that's pretty good stuff.
Yeah. What about Jazz? You don't like the Jazz?
I like the Jazz more than most. I always give the Jazz
love.
But
they don't excite you.
I mean, do you really want to see that? Do you want to see that in the finals against the Nets? Do you want to see
Probably not.
Now, the only thing that will be interesting is that because they've been together for so long, Snyder's been there 8 years, and they've got their core outside of Conley with the last year or two, but everybody else, you know, Spider's been there, and Ingles has been there, and Gobert's been there, et cetera. It would be an interesting test of the ultimate team versus the ultimate roster that doesn't have cohesion.
Yeah.
Like, that would be a good matchup within the matchup, but I want star power. Yeah. NBA Finals, I need star power.
Yeah.
And I need the Lakers.
And it feels like, as good as the Jazz are, and they're one of the best teams offensively and defensively in the NBA.
Yep.
It doesn't feel like it's star power.
No, it's not. It's not.
Yeah, it's an odd contradiction.
It's not star power. I mean, Mitchell's good. You know, ask Shaq. I mean, that was the whole thing. We talked about that 2 months ago, and when he just berated the poor guy after a game, he's like, you ain't a superstar, or whatever he said. And, you know, he was very classy, but you should have just thrown the cans down and said, Shaq, whatever, man. Yeah. I like it. You know, Shaq, we talked about
it. It would have been
that.
Justified. He would have gotten defended.
For sure. You know, but we'll see. I think that because they have the championship, they can really take this one day at a time. The urgency has been lessened. And that's advantageous for the Lakers. But we'll see how they play it. All right, Teak, let's get the update from ACK. Coming up after that, inbounds, out of bounds. I think we all know the Ravens need maybe a bit of an upgrade at receiver. I think we all think that. I don't think their GM thinks that. Mm-hmm. That's on the menu. We'll hit that after ACK's update right now. Here's Rich. All right, Teak and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio. Next hour, a little NFL talk. Benjamin Watson, former tight end. He'll join us. Mike Tomlin gets an extension. He's done a lot right there for a long time. But should there be a little more pressure for Tomlin? We'll get to that as well. Teak inbounds, out of bounds. Buddy, ready to jump in and see what we got today?
Let's do it.
Let's go.
Anything can happen in sports and often does. What's right? What's wrong? And who's just crazy? We decide. Inbounds and out of bounds now. And
okay, so the Ravens took a bit of a step back as a team a year ago. They went from the AFC's number one seed back in 2019, and they were a five seed this past year. Lamar Jackson saw his completion percentage, yards passing, touchdowns, and rushing yards all go down while he threw some more picks as well. Now, some attributed the regression to a lack of weaponry for Jackson, but GM Eric DaCosta isn't having that narrative.
I'm aware that there's some fan discontent with our wide receivers and our drafting and all that. I mean, but in general, I look at our record and how we win games and how we play football, and I'm proud of the team. I know Coach is proud. I know Joe is proud. So we've got some really good young receivers. It's insulting to these guys when they hear that we don't have any receivers. It's quite insulting. I'm insulted by it, too, to be honest. So I think we've got some guys that want to show everybody what they can do.
Okay, I mean, he is not mincing words, so let's see how we handle this here, Teak. We do believe that Jackson's regression was more about a lack of weapons as opposed to him just taking a step back himself, in or out.
I'm going to say out of bounds, but I don't know if it's necessarily about him taking a step back. I think Lamar Jackson came into the NFL with a lot of work to do, and he needs a perfect system for him. And Greg Roman is still trying to figure that out. And in his first couple of years, including his MVP season, it was, let's just focus on the things that he's great at and let him be that player. Mm-hmm. Rush for 1,000 yards and, you know, throw these pop passes to your tight end and, you know, things on the sideline, which he hasn't quite mastered timing-wise and a route, you know, concept reading-wise. Let's stay away from that. But eventually, people start to sink into the middle of the field, or they start to load the box, and it gets harder to run the ball and throw those over-the-middle routes to Andrews. And so I think this offseason had a lot to do with it, and this, meaning the past offseason, meaning no time to really work with him.
Yep.
I think this year we need to know and see some positive steps forward for Lamar Jackson, regardless of who his receiving core is.
Such a big season for him. I mean, he's going to get an extension, and rightfully so. But the amount that's guaranteed, the length, the I mean, all that is going to be directly tied, in my opinion, to what happens this year, not so much what's happened the past couple of seasons, because there's still some questions here. I do not attribute it to a lack of weaponry on the outside. Yeah, I mean, outside of, you know, two or three teams, who can't use an upgrade? I'm sure they can use a little upgrade, but he's got one of the better receiving tight ends in football. Andrews is a red zone threat, a ton of touchdowns. Mark Andrews is good. And I really, you know, just watching him play, and this is not something that we did not ignore this a year ago. He just missed some throws that it doesn't matter if I'm open. Yeah. I mean, you got to put it on the numbers. He made some high-level throws. He made some misses that make you scratch your head. I believe in Lamar Jackson, but I wouldn't bet my future on Lamar Jackson. That's where I currently am. I believe in him. I like him, but I'm far from convinced that he's the superstar that he looked like after his MVP year a couple of seasons ago.
Are you in or are you out?
Got some proving to do here. All right, last night the Suns, this game was incredible. This was great. Beat the Bucks in overtime. Controversial call with the horn. Game tied up at 127 apiece. Sun star Devin Booker, how good has he been?
Yeah,
took a desperate. He's been phenomenal. Took a desperation fall-away three-pointer from the right side that missed the mark, but the refs called a foul on P.J. Tucker, who appeared to lightly graze Booker's arm on the way up to contest the shot. After the game, Tucker expressed frustration with the call.
No, it is what it is. They made the call. I'm thinking that situation, that's a tough call to make. Tie game overtime, you know, from all the plays that happened before, how the game is getting officiated, I think that's a really tough call. But, you know, officials got to make those calls, and we did. And, you know, regardless of what I say or they say, you know, it's what happened. Game over. Get ready for Thursday.
Okay, so inbounds, out of bounds here, Teak. Refs should call end-of-game plays differently than the rest of the game. We've had this discussion before. Do you swallow the whistle late because it's late, or do you call it the way you're supposed to?
No, you got to call it like you're supposed to. It is, if it's a foul and, you know, with 20 minutes left, it's a foul with, you know, 2 seconds left.
Yep.
It is what it is. I think you got to be smarter if you're P.J. Tucker. And realize that, you know, if there's any doubt, you're going to get that call because that happens in the first quarter or the second quarter the same way. So he just has to be smart. I know you got to contest it, but you got to be smart about those contests.
You know, there's two camps here. Forget about whether or not the referee should make the call differently at the end of the game than they should in, you know, the second quarter and otherwise innocuous point in the game. That's the question, but, and I'll answer it in a moment. But I actually heard people debating whether or not it was actually a foul. Like, to me, it was a foul.
Yeah.
He got him.
Yeah, he did.
Got him lightly, but he got him, and he's a shooter. Any rhythm that's disrupted, and he got him right around the forearm as he was going up, that's a foul. It's not an egregious foul, but it's a foul. So I just wanted to get that out of the way. I thought it was definitely a foul. And, yes, the answer is inbounds here. Referees should call – no, the out of bounds. They should not call the difference. They should call it – the way it is. I've always been consistent with this. You've always been consistent with this. The only way I might disagree is if it's like, you know, a flip of the – on a Hail Mary, flip of the field.
Yeah,
like something wacky like that.
Yeah, but they rarely call that on those Hail Marys in
Agreed.
Football. They rarely call penalties there.
Yep, which is probably the right thing to do. But in totality, yeah, you foul somebody with 2 seconds to go or no time on a horn, it is what it is. You foul them.
Are you in or are you out?
All right, so the Hornets surprised a lot of people this year, thanks in large part to the great stellar play of rookie LaMelo Ball. Has been fantastic. We know he got hurt about a month or so ago, hurt his wrist, and he was expected to miss the rest of the season, but seems to be a quick healer, a savvy healer here. They've actually stayed afloat. They're sitting in the eighth spot. They've dropped a little bit, but they haven't fully drowned without him.
Yeah.
Now Ball's been cleared to resume individual workouts. And there's growing optimism he could be back within 7 to 10 days. So it opens up the question here. The Hornets should not let Ball return this year, considering his age and the severity of the injury to his shooting hand. In or out?
I'm going to say out of bounds. I think if he's healthy and he's cleared to go and he wants to go and he feels like he can play, he needs the experience. Now, regardless if they stay at 8 or fall down a couple spots, they're going to be in that play-in game. And I think any time a young player – especially a 19-year-old who didn't play college and was overseas for a lot of his youth, any time that he can get experience playing high-pressure basketball,
yep,
I think is important. So out of bounds. If he feels like he can go and they say he's cleared to go, let him go.
Teague, this is something else I've always been consistent with. If you are cleared, green light, let's go.
You're right.
Play the game.
You're right.
I mean, I understand the question. He is young. It's a shooting hand. I'm not getting on Santer here. But, you know, this notion that you've got to bubble wrap these kids. If you get medical clearance, lace up your sneakers, get out there and play. I mean, I don't even need to expand anymore. That is simple. If you're green lit, go ball. And he's going to want to play, so they should let him play.
Are you in or are you out?
All right, let's wrap it up with this here. NBA season, wrap it up, getting to the postseason here. Eyes are starting to turn to the draft, obviously. While most have Oklahoma State's Cade Cunningham, he was the consensus first overall pick throughout the entire season. That hasn't really changed. Although Evan Mobley from USC certainly opened some eyes. And we know about Gonzaga star Jalen Suggs. He could sneak into the top two after a great explosive performance in the NCAA tournament. Now, yesterday he made it official, Suggs did, by declaring for the draft. Although, I think Gonzaga's going to be okay because they got the number one rated player in the country.
Yep.
The 7'1" kid from Minnesota,
yep,
who's a five-star prospect, and I'm sure he's going to be pretty good.
Yep, Holmgren, by the way.
That's his name. There you go, Holmgren. Jalen Suggs does have the highest ceiling in the upcoming draft, in or out?
I'm going to say out of bounds, BT. I really like Jalen Suggs, and I think he's going to be a player in the NBA. I don't know if he's going to be a star.
Really?
But yeah, I mean, I don't know, because he's physically not – I mean, he's not – like what he did in college, like running through the lane and just being aggressive at the rim, I don't know if he's going to be able to do that in the NBA.
He's 6'4", 205.
Yeah, but 6'4", is not huge for a guard. You know what I mean?
So, if you play lead guard, it is. Jason Kidd, 6'4".
Yeah, but that's a different era, man.
Okay.
So
all right, go ahead.
I think Cade Cunningham has a better shot at being, because he's just bigger. Like he feels stouter.
Yeah,
and I think that's a big part of success in the NBA. I'm not saying that Jalen Suggs is not going to be a star player.
Yep.
I just feel like Cade Cunningham has the physical attributes that Jalen hasn't developed yet.
I actually agree with you. I was just throwing in some food for thought. I'm not worried about Suggs getting bounced around as much.
Yeah.
I don't think he's an uber athlete. He's a good athlete. He's got the football background, clearly, and he could take a hit, get to the rim, do his thing. I mean, he's a great player. He might go number two, as we said,
yeah,
if Mobley doesn't. But and I'm sure the shot will tighten up a little bit here. But to me, I look at Cunningham, and I see like a little bit of a Grant Hill.
Yeah, like there's like a poise there, right?
Yeah, he's the guy. To me, his ceiling is limitless. Like, I see 10-12 time All-Star with Cunningham, probably more if he stays healthy. And with Suggs, I see, you know, maybe six, maybe I'm nitpicking, 6 or 7. I just think Cunningham's better. I do. That's the guy that I would pick. Can't disagree, Teague. Coming up, back to the NFL, Benjamin Watson, former tight end, is going to stop by and join us. TP and Tierney, Hour 2, coming up.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Football fans, the NFL draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. AUDACY. Download it today.